We did a couple of verses last week, verse number 36 and 37, which is Arjuna's praise of the Lord, having seen this divine form where the entire universe was seen by Arjuna in the form of the Lord. Not only the universe that we see, but even the heavens, the gods in heavens, even the Patal, all the lower worlds were seen, past, present and future. And he could even see himself in that. You can see in this picture that you can see Krishna and Arjuna also in the picture. And then he saw the creator, he saw all the gods, everything, all the, even the other gods and goddesses, the saints, the demons, the sun and the moon, everything he saw in that beautiful picture. And he was filled with love and devotion. Initially he had fear, but then later on he realized that this form is actually a divine form here to bless me and to bless the universe. Because he could see that the entire enemy army is going to go into that and that he is going to be victorious. Not only that, he was just dumbfounded when he saw that huge, in that little body of Krishna of 6 feet or whatever he saw, the entire universe. And it was an amazing sight for him to see. And Sanjay, who was in at the palace, he also could see that and he is describing it. So his heart is filled with gratitude, with love, with adoration, with prayer, worshipping and praising this divine form. But it's not only a prayer of devotion, but has a lot of knowledge, a lot of Vedantic concepts, which we'll try to cover some of them today. So Arjuna, having not only he was a great devotee of the Lord, but he had studied the Upanishads and so on. So the words he expresses, according to Swami Chinmayananda, as I had mentioned last week, there is no greater prayer in the entire Hindu literature. Not only that, but he said this prayer is so universal that any religion, it can be applied to any religion, it can be applied to any faith, any group. It's a universal prayer. And he says there are very few prayers which are so full with love and with right knowledge in the entire literature. So last week he said, you are the, you know, you are the creator of Brahmaji and you are the one who has created everything. And the whole world is sustained in you, and you are the immutable, unchanging reality that is beyond Sat and Asat, beyond the manifest and unmanifest. The unmanifest and manifest are in you, and you are beyond. So that was verse number 37. In verse number 38, he continues this same message. So we'll read that, verse 38. Chapter 11.
Tvamadi devah purushah puranah. Tvamasya vishvasya param nidhanam. Vetasi vedyancha parancha dhama. Tvaya tatam vishvam anantarupa.
So he says, Tvam Adi Deva. I have translated it here so people can follow. Adi Deva means you are the primordial God. You are the primal. You were there before all the gods were there, before the universe was. And Purusha Purana, you are the ancient Purusha. As we know, the universe is a combination of Prakriti and Purush. Prakriti representing matter and Purush representing consciousness. We are also a mixture of Prakriti and Purusha, the consciousness. And the BMI represents matter. And then OET represents the universe. So this whole universe is Prakriti, is matter. But the spirit which is enlivening it, because of without which the matter would be not functional. So he says you are the eternal spirit, you are the total spirit that illumines and, you know, gives life to the, enlivens the entire universe. He says, Tvam asya vishvasya param nidhanam. And of this world, asya vishvasya, So sixth case, Param Nidhanam, you are the great refuge. You are also the abode. Nidhanam can be translated as abode or as refuge. Here Swamiji uses refuge. Vetasi Vedyam, and you are that who is the knower. You are the knower and you are the one that needs to be known. And you are Param Dhamma, you are the supreme abode. What we call as the highest abode where people go after death, and especially where the saints, where they merge into that. So you are that Param Dhamma. Param Dhamma also means the whole universe is contained in you. Tvaya Tatam Vishvam Ananta Rupa. This Vishvam, this world of Ananta Rupa, of endless forms, Tvaya Tatam, is pervaded by you. So there are some very beautiful qualities of the Lord that we shall talk about today. So he says, you are the Adi Deva. We already talked about that last week also, but you are the consciousness from whom all the Devas have emerged, whether it's Brahmaji, the creator, whether it's the god of the rain or the sun or the moon or the thunder, the lightning, the ocean, all Devas, even the creator. They say, oh, the creator was first. No, the creator was also created by this consciousness, by the Lord, because we can see here Brahmaji, the creator here, who is creating the universe. So the job of creation was assigned to the creator by that consciousness, that Brahman created and assigned it, just as a president assigns different jobs to his different secretary of defense, secretary of education, health, and so on. So that's how the different jobs. So the job of creation was given to Brahmaji. So you are that ancient Deva. You are that ancient Lord of the entire universe. And not only that, but even the materials that Brahmaji used to create the universe, air, space, fire, water, earth, were created by you. And then you supplied the material, as we had talked last time. The pot maker makes the pot, but he does not create the mud. It is the Lord who creates the mud, which the pot maker can then use. Then he says, you are the Purusha Purana. You are the ancient Purusha. You are the spirit. As I said, you know, we all the time think of ourselves as this BMI, as this body, mind, and intellect. And we spend all the time in purifying, beautifying, cleaning, dressing, you know, makeup, surgery, clothes, jewelry, all that, every better house, better car, everything is for this body, and we neglect the spirit. But they say that ultimately that is the essential nature of everybody, and that is the goal, that is the purpose, to realize the self. But spending a lot of time in self-beautification or getting more comforts and more material things is a waste of time, is unproductive. This reminds me of a little story. This lady was involved in a 200 plane accident and she died. And so she went up there and she met God, and God said, oh, you know, you are not supposed to be here. You're still supposed to live another 20 years. How did you happen to get on this plane? She says, oh Lord, I don't know. I showed up there at the last minute. Somebody canceled, and just as they were closing the gate, they gave me my ticket and boarding pass, and I ran in, and my bad luck, the plane crashed, and so I'm here. So God says, look, it's only been a few minutes, you know, since you left, so I'm sending you back when you have another 20 years to live. So she's very happy. So she goes back into that body, and then the body starts moving, and the people say, oh, she's still alive from the... She was the only one to survive. So they were so happy, her name in the papers and everything. So she's very happy, you know, I got a second life. I have 20 years, so let me enjoy it. So she went out and brought all new clothes and new jewelry, got plastic surgery done, made herself very beautiful face, body, changed her hair color, everything. And she came out of the beauty parlor, you know, looking so gorgeous, you know, because everything was beautiful. And she came out, and the moment she got on the car, she was hit by a drunk driver. And she died again. And so she went up to God, and she's very angry. You know what? You told me I have 20 years. How come I died again? God says, I'm sorry, I didn't recognize you. You change yourself so much. So that is how what we are. We spend our whole life taking care of this body. But they say that pay some attention to the spirit, to what you are, and then only your life will be fruitful. Then only your life will be worthwhile. Otherwise, you'll just go through this cycle again, you know, taking care of the body. Because the body, even animals take care of. Even they have a wife and they have a husband and they have children, and a sparrow has a beautiful nest and she takes care of her children and they fly away. And if we do the same, you know, I have my wife and my children and my house and my car and my $2 million in the bank and my stock portfolio and my pension plan, I'm not any better than that sparrow. Yeah, I have a little nicer house, I have a little more comfortable car, but my life is not so. That's what he says, that pay attention to the spirit. Tvamasya vishvasya param nidhanam. You are the refuge of this world. Now, Vishwa, Swamiji in his commentary explains that Vishwa, we think of Vishwa world as this visible world, you know, what I can see. Yes, that is Vishwa. What you can see, hear, smell, taste and touch, what you can perceive. But also all the emotions you can feel and all the ideas you can think. Not only I, but the entire universe of beings, of humans and birds and plants and fish, all their perceptions, all their emotions, all their thoughts, everything is Vishwa. It's not only the visible world, but the world of emotions and the world of thoughts. And it says you are the refuge. Now, Swamiji in his commentary has given me a hard job. Because he says that this world is not real. Those of you who read it or will read it, he says this world, can you put this up please if you do me just for a moment? So he says this world is not real. It is a projection upon the consciousness, just as a post upon a ghost. Or in Shankaracharya's philosophy, they say the rope and the snake. Of course, most of you are familiar with that rope and snake example. I'll talk a little bit, give you briefly the example, and then why is this world said to be not real? I'll try my best to explain it. It's not easy. So it says the rope and the snake, just very briefly, you know, there is a rope lying on the, in a forest path, you know, the path going through the forest, and it's late in the day, it's just barely, you know, the day is ending and the night is barely starting. So you can very faintly see the shadows, and so you accidentally walk in, you see the rope, and then you get afraid because you think it's a snake. And the moment you think it's a snake, all the fears of the snake and all the fright and all the, it looks like a poisonous snake, it might bite me. So all those things happen. Now the rope was never a snake. The rope is innocent, but in my ignorance, not seeing the rope as a rope, I project the snake. And because of my ignorance, I project all the sorrows. So that's what also Swamiji says. He gives the example of the post and the ghost. It is a similar example where there is a wooden post and I'm going, it's kind of dark, and I see the shadows of the post and I project a ghost, that I say this is not a post, it's a ghost, and I see the face and the hands and the legs and the eyes, all a projection of my ignorance. And then I get scared, it's a ghost, it might eat me up, and you know, it might haunt me and all that. And then a wise person comes and shines a flashlight and says, that's not a ghost, that's just a post. Or he'll come and shine, you know, that's not a snake, it's a rope. But you were misunderstanding the rope to be a snake. The snake was never there. It was my ignorance that projected it. The rope is innocent. But without the rope, the snake would not have been seen. Suppose there was no rope and I was walking there. Would I project a snake? No, I would just say, okay, it's an empty path. I would walk. So the rope is required for the snake projection. But the rope itself is not the snake. So he says, you are the refuge. But the world, he says, is not real. It is a projection. And has been said in many scriptures, Shankaracharya ji says it, the Upanishads say it, everywhere, you know, whether you look at Dakshinamurti Stotram, everywhere it is said that the world is not real. And we say, come on, you know, what are you talking? This table is real, my hand is real, my face is real, my sorrows are real, you know, when I get a pain, when I hurt my foot, or when, you know, then my pain is real. When somebody says something to me, my crying is real, my thoughts, and how can you say this world is not real, it's just a projection? To explain that, I have this verse, which actually will, it's actually even more confusing, but we'll just chant it. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Nat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti. That is the first verse, is the Shanti mantra of Ishavasya Upanishad. So it says Purnamada. So that is complete. So this is a mantra from the Upanishad. So Purnamada means that is complete. Purnam Idam, this is complete. So that is complete, this is complete. Purnat Purnam Udachyate. The complete comes out of the complete. The complete emerges from the complete. Purnasya Purnamadaya. When the complete is negated from the complete, Purnam Eva Avashishyate. The complete alone remains. So that is complete, this is complete. The complete came out of the complete. When the complete is negated from the complete alone remains. So we think the rishi who wrote this mantra must have had some, you know, little bit to drink. Maybe he was took LSD or marijuana. It, you know, doesn't make sense, you know, and this is a mantra in the Upanishad. They say, can't be. That's why you need a teacher like Swami Chinmayananda. That's why you and I, when we translate it, we think it is ridiculous. And at the first reading, it appears to be, but that's why a guru is required. People say, I don't need a guru. I can just study the Upanishads. I can read the Bhagavad Gita. But when we read, please come, we always misunderstand, we misapply. So let us take a little time studying this, because this will tell us what is creation, how the world was created. Now, just let us talk a little bit about creation. How is the world created, right? Now, in this world, for anything to be created, anything new, there are a few techniques, few methods. Like, okay, I have a big ball of clay and I take out a small ball of clay. So from the big ball, I made a small ball. So that is a creation. Then I took that small ball of clay and modified it, made it into a beautiful statue of Sri Krishna or Jesus or whatever. So that is another creation. Oh, so you created a beautiful statue and then you paint it and everybody praises it. Or you can, another way to create is like the earth came out of the sun. You know, the sun was there and the earth came out. Or like I take an apple and I cut one piece and I give it to my friend and then I keep three quarters. So I took one piece out and I gave it. So that's another way of creation. Or creation can be that a seed is planted in the ground. And the seed comes out and sprouts and creates a new tree and a new leaf. So that is another way of creation. Or a mother, you know, gives birth to a baby. So that is another way of creation. I think that's about it. You pretty much cannot think of much else. Now, any of these things, do they apply to God? Can you say that God was there and then a piece of Him came out and became this universe? So God is somewhere else and the universe is somewhere else and God became smaller. Just as the sun became smaller when you took out a piece, or that apple becomes smaller when you take out a piece. So did God become smaller? He was first 100 million miles and then he became 90 million miles. Can that happen? No, because they say God is infinite. From the infinite, no matter what you take out, it does not get less. So that theory of apple or that theory of the sun or that theory of the ball from which a smaller ball was removed is not valid because he cannot be made smaller. He is perfect. He is complete. They say, okay, how about modification? You know, God was there and then he became modified just as that little ball of clay I modified into a statue of Krishna. So can God become modified? You know, so God changed himself or somebody else came and changed God and made this earth. They say he's avyayam, he's immutable, he cannot be changed. In fact, he has always was, is and will be. He was the same, is the same, will be the same, never changing. So they say, oh, that's not valid either. God cannot change. Okay. From the seed comes the plant. So can we say it is like the seed, the plant came out of the seed. Now when the plant came out of the seed got destroyed. The seed was no longer alive. So can we say that God was there and from him came the universe and then God was destroyed? He died. It's not valid either. You say, okay, how about a mother and a child? You know, the mother came out, mother had the baby came out, mother is complete, and the child is complete, and no change happened in the mother, except she gained about 30 pounds. But there was basically no change in the mother, right? The mother was complete and the child was complete. Aha, that is perfect. That is the way creation happened. But the mother is cooking in the kitchen and the child is playing in the playroom. So is the mother there all the time with the child? No, mother is there in the kitchen. Child may be playing outside, may go to school. When he becomes a teenager, he's driving all over town at 2 o'clock in the morning. And the mother is not with the child. So the mother is not constantly with the child, right? So can we say that, okay, God left us alone. Okay, you guys are on your own. You have your car, you go. No, God is with us constantly. So that theory of mother and child does not hold true either because God is everywhere. So you cannot say that we came out and then we got separated from him. Then we say, okay, some ingredients were taken and together they were put together and a building was made. That is another way of creation. You take brick and you take mortar and you take cement and you take, steel and iron and all. But they all get modified. They get changed and they are no longer the same. So can we say God made himself into several pieces and then all of them? That does not hold either. So creation could not have happened because none of the methods of creation that we can think of applies to the creation of the universe. Can you think of any method of creating anything new that can apply to this creation? No, nothing. A sculpture, an artist making, nothing applies to that. So then how did the universe come into being? It's a little difficult concept, so please be patient with me and if you have any questions. So he says, that is complete. When they say that is complete, the rishi is talking about that God. Even though God is everywhere, he's here, he's in the space, he's between us, he's in us as life, he's in every cell of my body. But we don't perceive him, so we think that God in heaven. We always, and even the teacher, when he's talking to the student, the teacher knows that God is all pervading, but the student doesn't. Like when we go to a teacher, and so that's why we think that God, that God who is in heaven, or who lives in the temple or the church, or who lives in Bethlehem or Mecca or Kailash or Banaras or wherever. So we always think of God as that God. So he says that God is complete. So that God is, and we know that God is perfect, all pervading, perfect. We don't have any doubt about that. Then we say this is complete. When he means this universe that you can see, this world. And basically, it is complete. It is all self-sufficient. You know, everything is there on this earth for us to take care of ourselves. Everything is there in the universe. All the stars are maintained in their place. The planets are circulating. The plants are growing. The animals are multiplying. The fish are swimming. The birds are flying. So this, the humans are functioning. So this universe is also complete, is self-sufficient. But when the universe came out of the complete, that's why they say the complete emerged from the complete. So the universe came out of the complete, right? That everybody will agree that the universe came out of this consciousness. But when the complete is negated from the complete alone remains. Also, when the complete came out, God did not become incomplete. He still remained complete, right? Complete emerged from the complete. So what they are saying is that this universe is could not have been created because there is no method of creation that would show this universe as a universe. So then you say, well, how am I able to see the universe? How am I able to feel and experience the universe? They say just as you feel and perceive the snake on the rope. While you are perceiving the snake appears very real. If somebody comes and tells you that's not a real snake, it's a rope, you are not going to believe him. You say it looks like a snake, it looks like a snake. Also, the snake is complete, right? You cannot say I'm seeing half snake and half rope. The one corner of it is the rope and the 90% is the snake. No, the moment you see the rope, the snake disappears. And when you are seeing the snake, you are not seeing the rope. The rope is complete. When you see the rope, then you say, oh, the whole thing is a rope. When the light is there. When there is no light, you say the whole thing is a snake. So the snake is complete and the rope is complete. But it is a projection. So similarly, they say that this world could not have been created. It is a projection upon that consciousness. What it means is that this whole universe is nothing but that one consciousness. But because of the darkness of ignorance, of Maya, we project individuals upon that consciousness that this is, you know, this is so-and-so, this is Amrita, this is Kerry, this is Pankaj, this is Anamika. We project all names and forms and then divide. Okay, this is my friend and this is my enemy and this belongs to my race and this belongs to my community. This house is mine and that house is not mine. But if I can get that bigger house also, then I'll be happier. So we are projecting the differences. So they say that a wise person, a saint, has actually seen the world as the Brahman, as this consciousness. And so for him, there is no difference. For him or her, for the wild, wise person, they only see God and God and God everywhere. Once you see him, then like Tulsi Das Ji in Ramayana very beautifully says, Siya Rama mein sab jag jani, karahu pranam, jori jugpani. He says, this whole world is Ram and Sita. That means I see Ram in all the men, I see Sita in all the women, I see gods and goddesses. Karahu pranam jori jugpani. That's why everybody I meet, I bow down to them because they are my beloved Ram and that's my beloved Sita. So wise persons see that because they see the substratum. They see that there is only consciousness and this world is projected. Now how did this world come to be projected? How come we did that? So they say there is a power called Maya, which is the sum total of all the vastness. And it is the cosmic power of the Lord by which he projected the world and then he hid behind it. In Dakshinamurti Stotram, it says it very beautifully. Bijas antariva ankuro jagadidam prak nirvikalpam puna maya kalpit deshakalakalna vaichitrya chitrikritam maya viva vijrimbayat yapi maha yogi vaya svechaya Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namaidam Shri Dakshinamurtaye. Dakshinamurti is 10 verses. It's a very short book. But that book everybody should read and memorize. It is so beautiful. There is no better short text which has the entire essence of the Upanishads, the entire essence of everything is in that book. There is nothing you can... It's only 10 verses. I had studied that from Swamiji and Swami Ishwaranandaji, and it's a beautiful text. But in this verse, they talk about creation. Bijas antar eva ankuro jagadidam. That's this world was unmanifest in God, just as a plant is unmanifest in the seed. Bijas, just as in the seed, the plant is unmanifest. And when the right conditions come, the plant comes out. So similarly, this world appeared. How? Maya kalpita desha kala kalna. What were the factors for creation? Just as when you have a graph, there is an X and a Y, right? So the X and any line you draw, it is limited by the X factor and the Y factor. The Y factor determines height, X factor determines length. I think those who have studied geometry or algebra will know that. So X and Y are the limiting factors for any line. Any line you draw, you can say, okay, one point here, it is 5X and 4Y. You know, everybody knows that. So what were the limiting factors in this creation? Desha kala, space and time. And space and time are the limiting factors in any creation, right? This whole universe is limited by space and by time. Each or every one of us also, we occupy limited space and we stay here for a limited time. This building was not there, now it's occupying some space. And then in a few years, you know, we may have to break it and make a bigger building or move somewhere else. So that it is limited in space and limited in time. It's not going to be forever. You know, even this universe, this earth is limited by space and time. So he says Maya was the power. Then how did he do it? Maya vi eva, just as a magician. And yogi, mahayogi, just as a magician. Now when you go to Las Vegas and you see, who is that? The two magicians, David Copperfield or that other two men who were performing. Now, when you are on the stage, he will bring a plane on the stage. He will bring a car, and he will create a whole universe of. And then you say, "How did he do that?" And then you know, in a flash of an eye, it's gone. And then you say, "Only the stage." So, just as a magician can create a magic, so the Lord has created this universe out of magic, like a magician. He has created this world, and in that magic, there is no reality on that stage. There is no plane. In fact, they actually make a plane land. That's, you see that in Las Vegas. But there was no plane, but he is able to fool the audience into believing there is a plane. It's a mixture of tricks and hypnosis. So similarly, this Lord of the universe with his Maya, with his cosmic power, created this whole universe. To that Lord is this prostration. So what is the importance of knowing it? What is the significance of it? Why should I know that this world is a dream? And then also some people say this world is a dream in the mind of the Lord. Just as when I'm dreaming, I create this whole world of, you know, I am in the forest and there is a tiger chasing me and I'm climbing up the tree and I'm scared and I'm... Now there is no forest, there is no tree, there is no tiger, there is not even me in Africa. But in my dream, I see all that. And when I wake up, then I say, oh, I'm so happy I'm in my bed in Bakersfield. I'm not in Africa. So in that dream, I project the whole world. So they say this whole world is projected in the mind of the Lord. And we are all part of that dream. So why should I know that? What is the importance of knowing it? First of all, we give too much importance to this world, that this world alone is real and I have to do everything. And then we are fighting with the world, and then when there are problems, you know, then we go to a psychiatrist and say, give me some medicines, or I'm having problems, I go to the God and pray, oh God, you know, please give me, you know, relief from my suffering. Or then I go to a pandit and tell him, come and do rituals and prayers. Well, that's very good. I'm not putting that down. I'm not saying that, you know, rituals are good, prayers are good. But until you remove your ignorance, the world is always going to give you sorrow. Like that snake. Now I see the snake, right? So what I do, I take a stick and keep beating that snake. Now is that snake going to disappear, or is my sorrow going to disappear? I might feel a little better, but I'll still see the snake as a snake. Or I call a pandit to do the prayers. Do some rituals, Om Swaha, Swaha. Please make the snake disappear or make my sorrow disappear. I might feel a little better, or if I go and pray to the Lord, oh Lord, you know, this snake is torturing me. Please be sure that my sorrow is removed. Yeah, my sorrow will be reduced, but the snake will still remain a snake. So the world will continue to give me problems. Yeah, by going to the Lord and praying, or by doing some rituals, or by doing some activity, or by going to a doctor and taking some, you know, some medicine, my sorrows will be temporarily reduced, but will not be eliminated. It's only when I shine the flashlight and I see that the snake is no longer a snake, is a rope, then my sorrow is permanently disappeared. Then 1,000 people can tell me that's a snake and all those. I say, come on, I've seen it. It's a rope. So in this world, the world will keep giving you problems. You can go to the doctor and take medicine. You can fight with the world and beat the world like you are beating the snake. You can go to pray. You can do prayers and rituals. Those are all very good. But the permanent solution is to know that this world is not real. And I am not real. This body, mind and intellect is not real. There is only one consciousness. That is the permanent reality. So then what am I doing on this world? They say, I am in this world playing a particular part. Whatever role has been given to me as Mary or as Tony or whatever part I have been given, I play that to the best of my ability, but remember that I am not the part, but I am that consciousness. And I am functioning in the world as this individual. Once you remember that, then whatever happens to this body is not that important, you know, or whatever happens, somebody tomorrow praises me, criticizes me, some joy. I do not give too much importance, just as an actor who's playing a role in a play, you know, in that play now his character gets beaten and then he gets shot and then he gets sick and then he dies. So does the actor say, oh, I am shot, I am sick, I died? No, the actor knows that it's my character that is being shot, that is being killed, but I am fine. But sometimes people do get so much involved, like Heath Ledger, you know the story, who played the Joker in the Batman movie. He got so caught up in that role, Heath Ledger, he was an Australian actor. He got so caught up that he started thinking, I am the Joker, and he started wearing the Joker outfit even on the street, even when he was off the set of the movie. He for days on end, he wouldn't change, he wouldn't take a bath. Why? Because he didn't want that makeup to go away. And then he was so caught up, he was mentally disturbed, he was taking multiple psychiatric medicines, he was taking hydrocodone and oxycodone and 4 or 5 different meds and sleeping pills and cold medicine. Finally, he died of overdose of, accidentally, he took so many medicines. Why? Because he forgot that he's Heath Ledger, who is playing the role of a Joker. He said, it can't happen to us. But it has. Because we are of the nature of consciousness. We are of the nature of bliss. We are that Brahman, that consciousness. And we have got so caught up in that role that we say, I am Anil, I am Diana, that is who I am. And no matter how much the teacher may tell us, we don't believe it. So they say that just as the wise person shines the light, so the teacher in this Upanishad is telling us that the world is projected from that, emerged from that, but when you negate it, you find the consciousness alone remains. The world it disappears and Brahman alone remains. The consciousness alone remains. The world is, it does not mean that I don't work in the world. I do my job that is assigned to the best of my ability, and I constantly remember that my goal is self-realization, and until I wake up, I will have to keep on getting more and more births, and I will have to keep on suffering. So the end of sorrow cannot come by buying a bigger house or by getting a different wife or by changing my home or my country or my family or my house or my wife or my job or my None of these can give you permanent happiness. They'll give you temporary joy. You know, okay, I got a new house, I'm happy. I got a new car, I got a new job, I have a new wife. But everything will be temporary, everything will disappear. Knowing that I am that consciousness is the only way. I am the rope, I am not the snake. This body, mind and intellect of mine is the snake. That is the snake. And that is I am projecting, but I am actually that rope. Once you understand that, I am that. I am, that's what the entire Upanishad is, Tattva Masi, the teacher tells them, you are that consciousness, you are not this body. And the student understands. He says, Aham Brahmasmi. I am that consciousness. And then whatever life I have left, I will continue to do my duties, but never forget who I am. And that is a realized master. A realized master who has says that I have become one with that. That's what Jesus said. That he who has seen me has seen the Father. You know, the Father in heaven and I are one. Shankaracharya said that also, that I am that consciousness. All of the Upanishads say that. And until you realize that, you will keep on having problems. So the idea is that this whole universe is real, temporarily real. At this moment is real because I don't see the consciousness. But once you wake up and realize, then you will see the world as a dream. Then you will still function, but you will not get so much affected by what is happening. You will remain in your state of bliss. Not only that, you will become a realized master who will serve the world. You will become a Jesus, you will become a Buddha, you will become a Shankaracharya, you will become a Swami Chinmayananda, who will then serve the world out of love and compassion. So that is the glory of knowing this knowledge. A, it frees you of sorrow. B, it makes you realize you are permanent. Then death is no longer a fear. You know, they say death of who? Of this body? That's okay. Let the body drop. Body is meant to drop, right? I cannot live for 300, 400 years. Once I become 80, 90, 100, I'll drop the body. So what? We are so afraid of death, our death, or if somebody else dies, we get so sorrowful. So that fear of death goes away. Then there is no sorrow. There is no, you know, if money came and lost and went, okay, it was not meant to be for me. It will come, phir aa jayega, you know. Because we get so affected by money coming, money going, money this happening, that happening. I got a new piece of jewelry, I get happy. I am fine whether I have that jewelry or not, whether I have that sari or not, whether I have that new car or not, whether I have golf clubs or not. It does not mean that, you know, you give up everything, but you do not get so attached that you depend on those objects. So it changes. And then the third point is that once you see that I am that consciousness, then you see everybody is that consciousness. All of you are that consciousness just as I am. Then there is universal love. Then there is universal oneness and sympathy and compassion. Now this I am consciousness is for me. So if I am going through a sorrow, I can say I am consciousness, my body is going through sorrow, and you know that's very good. But suppose your neighbor's mother dies, you don't go and tell them, you know, you are consciousness, she is consciousness, she died, so what? No, that's not for that's not for the neighbor. For the neighbor, you go and express sympathy. I'm so sorry, your mother died, and I'm, you know, and all, we pray for her soul. All those things you have to do, but tomorrow, suppose that person also starts studying Vedanta and reads the Upanishads, then he or she, then you can talk, you know, yeah, see, that's what the books say. So this knowledge actually frees you from lot of sorrows, from lot of problems. It makes your life much simpler, much more efficient, much better. And this, what I have said, it may be a little difficult to grasp. Even for me, it took me many years to understand that. I don't think I have still yet fully understood, but I'm trying to share whatever knowledge. So it may not make sense to you right away, and you might say, this is all nonsense. You know, this is all some drunk rishi is talking. But the more you think about it, you realize that, yes, there is one consciousness in the Dakshinamurti. Again, he says, balya dishvapi jagrada dishu tatha sarvasu avasthasu api. He says from childhood to now to middle age to old age, I was always there. I was there as a baby, I was there as a youth, I was there as an old man, and I will be there even when this body dies. So that I, the more you pay attention, you then experience that. That's what we practice in meditation. When we meditate, we say, take your attention away from this body, mind and intellect and turn it inwards to that inner life, that inner consciousness. So if we think about it and practice it and start living it, I remember when Neha, my daughter, and I, when she was about 6 or 7 or 8 years old, I used to take her to school. And in those days, it used to be get colder. Nowadays, we don't have that. But it used to be very cold in the car. We would get in the car and turn on the heat. And I would say, Neha, you are not this body. So don't worry. So we made a joke out of it. She said, yes, Dad, I am not this body. I'm not feeling cold. This body is feeling. And understanding something like that can free you from a lot of things. Okay, the body is feeling cold, but I am not. Like people are going through so much sorrow in New Jersey. Now for us, it is good to feel sorry for them if we can send money or send. But for a person who is going through it, if he keeps on crying, oh, I have no electricity, oh, no. Then he or she will be miserable. If he or she will say, okay, you know, it's meant to happen. This body has to go through, but I am fine. Then you can go through the sorrow. We're not saying that if you don't have electricity, you just say, oh, it's okay to not have electricity. If you can get electricity, go ahead and do it. Light a lamp or turn on a heater or whatever. But if you can't do that, you say, okay, Lord, it's meant to be. It will happen to kalp or so. Electricity will come eventually. So the person's ability to handle the daily sorrows improves when you can identify with the consciousness and disidentify with this body mind. I don't know if I made sense. It's a very difficult concept. Before we proceed, I thought maybe we can stop for a minute and if anybody has any questions or comments. Om and Brahman is the same. Om is one of Brahman's names. God has 1,000 names. You know, they say, you know, God has, so Om is one of those names. Om represents Brahman. Om is the sound symbol that represents Brahman, because Brahman is formless, cannot be seen, cannot be described, cannot be understood. You know, it is all pervading, but we cannot understand it. But Om is the sound symbol, just as when you have a picture of Krishna or Ganpati or Jesus or Buddha, then you say that this idol represents. So Krishna is God, but he represents Brahman. He represents that consciousness. He at this moment is identified with that consciousness. So similarly, Om is a symbol that represents God. Just as Jesus represents Father in heaven, just as, you know, Buddha represents that Nirvana state. So Om represents Brahman. Well, Brahman cannot be described. So Om is a simpler way of reaching Brahman. So Om is the method. Yeah, Brahman is the goal. Om is the method. Om is the means. Like in the Mundaka Upanishad, it says, Om is the arrow, which when you use and shoot, then you reach the target of Brahman. So Om is the method. That's why we use Om in our meditation. We use Om, you know, in every class. Because Om is a means, like when I say Om, it should remind me of that Brahman. Just as when I say Krishna, I see Krishna with the flute. Or when I say Shiva, I see Shiva in meditation. Or when I say Jesus, I see Jesus on the cross. So similarly, when I say Om, it should remind me of that infinite creation. So we just don't say Om, 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 just like that. When you chant Om, you realize you are chanting God's name. Yeah, that is Brahman, but right now we think of it as that. But actually Brahman is this and that, both. But in the ignorance, we think of it as that, as being far away. When I say that tree, and then I say this table, you know. I don't say that table, I say this table, but then I might say that chair, because the chair is far away. So that represents far and this represents near. So that represents God and this represents the world. But they are actually both the same. That is what he is trying to say. And when you negate that, then negate this world, then Brahman alone remains. So when you, once you understand, actually even right now we are all that consciousness, but we don't understand that. You can, yes. Om is fine, yeah. Om is a means to reach that. But Om is one of that Brahman's names, one of his names. But Om is a method. That's why we chant Om. Yeah, no, that's a very good point you have made. First of all, this body is very important. The body, you're saying, you're negating or it's not important, but it's the body that is required to function in the world. And when we drop the body, then what happens to the consciousness? So it's a two-sided question. So one point I absolutely agree with. The body is very important because this human body is not easy to get. In our Puranas, they say you have to go through 8.4 million births. 84 lakh yoni, 8.4 million births before you get the human body. You have to have done, you have to be very fortunate because there are so many plants and birds and animals and they don't have a human body. We are fortunate. So human body is something to be cherished and to be preserved. I did not say that one should not take care of the body. If you get sick, you need to go to the doctor. If you're feeling cold, you need to put on a blanket, turn on the heat, and you need to have, you know, money for your comforts and your home and all. What we are saying is that giving too much importance to the body is wrong. And the body should be taken as an instrument to realize the truth. So this body I have is an instrument to do two things. One is to serve the world. Second is to realize the truth. That's what Mahatma Gandhi said. He said, you serve the world. That's why he saw God in everybody. Harijan, that's why he called everybody. And till his last breath, he was remembering God. So that is the kind of life we should all live. A life of service and a life of self-realization. Swami Chinmayananda, till the last day of his life, he was teaching. He was, you know, giving talks and all. Even when his heart was not working, he could have stayed in Bombay and just said, okay, I'm going to stay in a posh, you know, residential nursing home, like a hospital, and they'll take care of me and I'll live comfortably. He said, no, even if I have 10% of the ventricle left, my job is to educate the world. And I have seen him, even with his heart not working, he couldn't breathe. He was still giving talks. So the purpose of this body is it's a temple of God because God resides here. So we need to take care of this body, make sure this body is healthy. But unnecessarily pampering it, spending a lot of time and money and effort on it, like plastic surgery, you know, better is that whatever time I have and whatever abilities I have, whatever money I have, it should be all devoted to the service of the Lord. And my intellect should all the time be seeking knowledge, meeting with saints and reading good books and meditating and studying on my own so that I ultimately realize the truth that I am not this body. At this moment, if somebody tells me I'm not this body, I'm not going to believe it because I don't have the experience. Even I am giving this talk, but I have myself not experienced it. But saints say that there is a state like that which you can experience it. And you get little glimpses of that. That silence and that peace, like when we went to Dwarka, I those 2 days I felt like I was in heaven. And when I was leaving Dwarka, I felt Vira, like my heart was inside crying that I'm leaving something very precious. And that was such a rare feeling. I have never had that for any place. Even when I left my parents' home to go, to, you know, to come to the States, I was all excited. But, and you know, it was just a city. What is in there? But somehow those 2 days, that's why this yatra was amazing. Or, you know, in some of these places, or when we took a dip in that Triveni, that where the three rivers meet in Allahabad, you feel a very peculiar energy. It's only water, you know, this is, kya hai, pani to hai. But when you take a dip in there is something. So moments like that give you that feeling that there is something higher than this body. Or sometime in meditation, like especially when we are meditating in a group, when the mind becomes extremely silent, then you experience that silence and then you don't feel like getting up. You don't, because the time ends and the light gets put on. But we don't. So moments you may experience that little taste of that, but the permanent taste can only happen when the final realization happens. That's what the Mahatmas, they live in that permanent state of realization. You and I may experience little flashes of the light here and there. But yeah, the body is very important. That's your first question. And the body should be used to realize the truth. That is the purpose of the body, and my mind and intellect should, the body should serve him, the mind should love God, and the intellect should know him. So my whole, all my ability should be directed towards that. And while I am working in the world, I have to work. Like I'm seeing patients, I see them as God. Every woman who comes, it's God is in front of me. Then your attitude to the patients is different. Your attitude to your neighbor and your friends and everybody changes. So that's number one. Your second question was, what happens at death? That's a long question. I'll try to answer in brief. I think I have done that before. And maybe we'll make it a short answer. That also is a lengthy question. So what happens? Now I am consciousness. I am the body. And I am vasanas, mind and intellect. Vasanas are the desires. Mind is the feeling, emotions. And intellect is the thoughts. So I am the consciousness, and the body is my equipment, and the mind and intellect are my equipment I use to function in the world, right? I use the body, mind and intellect. I hope you are convinced of that by now, that I am the consciousness and this body, mind and intellect are my equipment to function in the world. So when I die, the body gets burnt or buried or whatever, you know. So the body doesn't go anywhere. Now, nothing happens to that consciousness. Consciousness or Brahman, which is what is life in me, is life everywhere. Nothing happens to that. Consciousness doesn't change or doesn't die. Why am I alive? Because I have this equipment called mind and intellect where the consciousness is reflecting. The consciousness that is everywhere reflects in the mind and intellect. That's why this individual is alive. That's why a rock is not alive, even though the consciousness is in that rock, but the rock doesn't have a mind and intellect, so cannot move. A plant has a limited mind and intellect, but the plant also has some intelligence. It knows to go towards light, and if you play nice music, then the plant grows better. So plant has a mind and an intellect. So this mind and intellect equipment is what makes me what I am. The body is the same. Everybody has the same body. The consciousness is the same. The body, there are some subtle differences, male, female, young, old, but otherwise we. So my emotions and my thoughts and my desires is what makes me what I am. And what makes you what you are, what makes you what you are. The body is the same. The consciousness is. But each individual's emotions are different, thoughts are different, and desires are different. Your desires are different from mine, your emotions. So this vasana, mind and intellect package is called jiva or the jivatma. You know, one is the atma, the consciousness. That nothing happened, doesn't die. That's why in the second chapter he says, now fire cannot burn it and all that. So this jiva, this individual drops the body and then goes searching for a new body. Nothing, you know, and based on my emotions, based on my thoughts, and based on my desires, I find a new body. Like in this life, I really wanted to be a musician and I didn't have an opportunity. Then in the next life, I'll be born in a musician's family where they'll teach me how to sing. Or if I was very poor and I, you know, didn't want to, you know, never had any money, but really wanted, the next life, I will be rich. But not only my desires, but also based on my karmas. Based on my good or bad actions, if I have been a horrible individual, if I was a multimillionaire, and I was horrible to the whole world and I died and I didn't suffer, then in the next life you will suffer the consequences. So this package called the jiva or the jivatma then goes into higher or lower worlds called heaven or hell and waits for a suitable body based on its desires and based on its karmas. So the individual doesn't die. The individual, the subtle body doesn't die but goes into subtle worlds. This gross body dies, but the subtle body doesn't die and the consciousness doesn't die. So then when I find another suitable body, then I enter the mother's womb and then I take birth, you know, or it could be animal body, could be a plant body, depending on my karmas, depending on my actions. And then I start my journey again, and then the consciousness again illumines that individual's mind and intellect. So that's how the rebirth, reincarnation, that's how. And depending on my karmas, I could be take birth in a 1 month, or I could take birth in 100 years. You know, if I've done a lot of bad deeds, I might suffer in hell for 100 years. Or if I've done a lot of good deeds, I might live in heaven for 1,000 years until it is time for me to take birth again. They describe that as the bus station. Like say if I'm going from here to Los Angeles, I take a Greyhound bus and go to LA. And then from LA, one person wants to go to Riverside, one wants to go to San Diego, one wants to go to Palm Springs. Now in LA bus station, they're all waiting. Now the Palm Spring bus leaves in a half an hour. So he quickly runs for the bus. The Riverside bus leaves in 4 hours. And the San Diego bus doesn't leave till the next day. They say there is no bus. So one person takes off in half an hour. Other one goes in 4 hours. Other one says, there is no bus. I have to go stay in a hotel. And tomorrow morning, I'll take the bus. So depending on that, each one takes their particular bus. So similarly, each one takes their particular body based on their karmas and based on their actions and based on their desires. Miscarriage means that individual... No. It's very simple. No. It's very simple. See, everybody who dies, every being, the time is fixed based on their vasanas and based on their karmas. So miscarriage, that individual that dropped, its existence was only for a few months. And then it dropped. So for that particular body... And for those particular vasanas, it was destined that the child would only live for 3 months in the mother's womb and die. So it is all predestined based on, and so then the child will start a new body somewhere else. And some people live till 5 years, some till 16 years, some live till 90 years. So whatever is required for this body, so that's why what I say is, you know, whatever life I have, Lord, and they say in the Upanishads, O Lord, sthire rangai rustu vagam. Lord, whatever life you have given me, let me be healthy so I can serve you. And when it's time to go, I can cheerfully go. It helps you to accept your own death and also the death of others. But like I said, you cannot go and tell a mother that, or you cannot go and tell somebody else that. If somebody else is going through suffering, you give them a hug and, you know, help them. But for myself to understand why this world is what it is, this knowledge is very bad, is very good. Right. Sorry, I brought a difficult concept, but Swamiji in his book has written about post and ghost, so I said, Arema. I hope I explained it a little bit. It's a difficult concept. I don't know if I was able to. Yeah, ghost are, yeah, the subtle body still wandering around, yeah. Yeah, you know, especially it happens with the near ones, if they cry too much, then that individual cannot leave. That's why they say after a certain amount of mourning, you should let that person. Person is already gone. If you cry for 6 months, a year, you the person is still suffering. They cannot leave. So they say that's why in our Hinduism, they say 13 days, you know, that's it. It's a period of mourning. Then it's done. It's not that you don't love that individual, but just to constantly cry. And some people for months and years, there's some ladies come, oh, my mother died and I'm crying. I say, when did your mother die? 7 years ago. I mean, you know, you feel sorry your mother died, but nobody is permanent. You know, one lady came to me, my mother is dying, so I'm drinking alcohol every day. I become an alcoholic. So I said, why are you drinking? Oh, I'm so sorrowful that my mother is dying. I said, how old is your mother? She's 88. I said, well, nobody's going to live forever and she's sick and old and sick. So there'll be a time she will go. So why are you ruining your life and drinking alcohol every day just because my mother is dying? That's the nature of the world. No, nobody, either I am going to live forever, nor you are. So there's no point of ruining the present. You know, that's, so it helps you to accept death. ठीक बताया इन्होंने. शी सेड द देयर इज अ मंत्र व्हिच सेज द ब्रह्मन इज द ट्रूथ एंड दिस वर्ल्ड इज मिथ्या इज अनट्रू. बाय अनट्रू वी डू नॉट मीन दैट इट डजंट एग्जिस्ट. व्हाट वी मीन इज इट इज अ टेम्पररी एग्जिस्टेंस. द ओनली थिंग परमानेंट इज दैट कॉन्शियसनेस दैट इज गॉड दैट इज परमानेंट. एवरीथिंग एल्स इज टेम्पररी. And if you live your life, she said, with the sattvic, with good qualities, live, be a good person and all help the world and serve the world and constantly stay in that state of God awareness, then at the time of death, you become one with that God. Then you don't have to take birth again. So that is the quality of the masters, that they live their life in service and in constant remembrance, like Mirabai. She said, my husband is only Krishna. I have not seen anybody else. I don't care, my husband, my father-in-law, my parents, nobody. And for her, that was alone the truth. And in that process, she composed so many beautiful bhajans and became a role model for all of us. Constantly remembering the Lord and living for the Lord is the way to. So that's what she said. That only way you can realize is by constant awareness and by constant living a life of sattva, living a life of goodness, life of service, and a life of constant remembrance of the truth of God. Thank you. I don't think so. I think that's... And maybe even if there is, that's not important. Yeah. I don't know if they do or not, but you know what I do is, first of all, if they do or not, you know, namaskar, theek hai, they are. What am I doing with my life? Am I becoming a better individual? And you know, let the ghosts be, let them be where they are. Why do I have to get involved? They are a different world. They're not in my world. In my world, I see the people. Let me deal with them in a better way and let me evolve. Like she said, let me live a life of sattva. And ghosts, okay, you know, they are fine. They are fine where they are. They are not in my world. They cannot bother me. Ghosts cannot bother you because it's a different universe. It's not the same world. There are multiple levels of worlds there are. There are, you know, 14 lok, 14 worlds there are, which are all different levels of consciousness. And ghosts don't live on this earth. They don't have a physical body. They cannot walk and talk. They cannot come and eat your food and all. So if people say ghost came and ate it, that's not true. So don't worry too much about ghosts. Worry about the living.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo. Hari Om.